And welcome to the Planet Podcast from the closing of E3 2010. I'm your host, Patrick Roanhouse, and I'm here with a multitude of guests in the post-E3 after party in a hotel room. We'll start with our first guest host,
Timothy Torres from 2DX.com.
Jeffrey Wilson, 2DX.com.
Valcor at TheOtherView.com.
Chris Berlich, PowerPage.org and MacLife.
Thomas Rivas from 2DX.com.
And so we're here to talk about E3 2010. It has just ended today. Today is June 17th, the last day of it. And first thing we want to talk about, I guess the big thing that was mentioned, we'll talk about new hardware.
There was new hardware?
What? Lots of hardware.
What was that about Dreamcast 2?
What? Shut up.
Oh, sorry.
So, some of the new hardware was the rebranded Xbox Kinect, which was the Natal.
Of course.
Yeah. We're currently in a hotel room, so we ordered pizza. So, give us credit for that. So, we have the Xbox Kinect. Kinect for Xbox is the name. What do you guys think of that name, and have any of you gotten the chance to play with it while at E3 this year?
I've got no problems with the name. I had problems with how they presented it on the floor, and specifically Sonic Freeriders. Have you seen that?
Yeah,
there was like this closed off, like windowed, you know, booth area, bulletproof glass or something, and you couldn't go play it. You had to like watch models from Sega play it.
Yeah,
that ticked me off a bit, but. I don't know. It looks like, what was it, the PlayStation Eye toy to me.
Okay. You, man? Jeremy?
Am I allowed to swear in this podcast?
Keep it to a minimum, okay. If possible. So.
Okay, I didn't give a crap about it or the Sony Move. I am not sold on the motion controls at all. I am a joystick man, and every game I've seen so far has been a fitness game or you're dancing around to a song or something. That's not my type of game. So.
Okay. So, you, man, what'd you think?
As far as the Kinect or...
Kinect.
Not feeling either one. I think the whole thing with the motion control, I think the Wii has done it. I think we should just move on to something else.
Okay.
3D!
Oh, yeah. So, Chris, what'd you think of the Kinect?
What do I think? I think the Wii did it best. I think the Sony Move is doing it second best. And I think people were kind of put off by the Kinect in that you don't have a physical thing in your hand that you're grasping. Like with the Wii, you're sort of reassured. With the Move, you've got something in your hand, you're reassured. Here, you're just moving your body and waving your arms around like Turbo Boost, and I'm offering a competing product. I think it'll do the same thing. It's called Virtual Crackhead.
Like, what are you doing on my street? Don't you look at me. I actually got that while walking through the convention center parking lot.
Oh, totally.
I got spoke by a crackhead also.
She was I was taking pictures of the outside of the convention center. She's like, don't take pictures of me! Don't take pictures of me!
She have a white mouth?
Yes.
What?
She was what? Yes, and she was carrying like...
She stalked me!
Nice!
Actually, a woman took my garbage away from me for recycling purposes.
Nice.
Civil servant.
Yeah. Freeing crackheads.
Nice. The other video game accessory toy that came out was the PlayStation Move, first showed at GDC back in February. What did you guys think of the Move?
I think these guys are doing a good job of playing catch up. They claim that this, you know, is so much more advanced. I didn't see it on the floor. Lines were way too long for that and for the Kinect. But I am still waiting for the app that appeals to me. You know, I don't feel like dancing. I don't feel like waving my arms. It's not DDR. I didn't really dig it.
What do you think, man?
I can't speak for most of Sony's stuff. It was pretty crowded there, and frankly, most of the stuff didn't interest me that much, like Medal of Honor, and like Resident Evil 5 had a move thing now, like you could, like Resident Evil 4 for the Wii, pretty much. Speaking of which, I guess the obvious thing is now is that developers can start, you know, making a game on the PS3, and
here
then
comes the shovelware,
downport it to the Wii. Yeah. So I guess that's a great, you know, if you love money. But I think it's an attractive looking device. I mean, it looks like a lollipop.
It's a blue and a red lollipop.
And apparently, I was hearing one guy was telling me at the show about a game called Sorcery.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see it there. I haven't even heard of it until he told me about it. And apparently, he described it as like a Harry Potter game, sort of. I mean, I guess you're a badass wizard, and the wand is your actual wand, and you could like slash the ground, like make a slashing movement toward the ground to make like fire rise up out, mm-hmm. and like mix potions with the wand and like drink it and do all those motions, and you could do like a some kind of wind spell move, like make a tornado motion with your arm. Mm. And just, you know, point. So that sounded pretty cool.
Okay, but to me that sounds like a lot of work.
Exactly. I agree that, you know, I'd rather have the joystick and the buttons. Mm. But a game like that, I mean, that sounds interesting.
It sounds cool in a Harry Potter sort of way, and I'm not against it. Mm. I'm just against a lot of work.
Well, I think the one thing is that a couple years ago from E3, do you remember that Brainwave guys, they were showing off that like helmet that you wore, and it was able to read your brain functions, and you could control games that way.
Was it OCZ?
I think so. Yeah,
I actually tested that out for a Laptop Magazine.
I'm surprised you don't see more of that coming in there, because originally there was talk when the PlayStation 3 was first coming out. I remember that they wanted to actually make games that had a motion control system. So if you thought and like focused with like, you know, speaking the words of the magic spell,
right?
And the more dedicated, more thought process, like the more, you know, concentration you had in saying those words, the more powerful your spell was. And so, like, I think you're going to start seeing stuff like that. Like, I as a guy who likes gadgets, I actually really like the Move. Mm. Because I got to play, you know, behind the doors of part of the test demo of the Move last year.
Yeah.
And basically, like, when you pulled the arrow out of the back of your quiver and, you know, pulled it back like this, you could shoot it with just the bow, or I could just throw the arrow at the guy. Mm-hmm. And I just thought there was a little bit more of a sense of realism to it. Mm-hmm. You know, with an Atoll, that's still jittery. Like, had anyone played it at all, like, in any of the demos or trying to...
It just looked jittery.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotten a lot better from what it was. Mm. I mean, if anyone remembers Kudo when he did the first Atoll demo last year, like, when he was jumping and, like, moving his legs, like, the legs were all, like, flippering around and, like, all stuff like that. Like, they actually, like, stand still now.
That's the one thing I do credit Natal with, the Kinect with. It's a full body motion experience. Yeah. And your legs are now involved. I mean, there's so much more possibilities that can open because of that. I can imagine like a Shaw Brothers Kung Fu game where, you know, you're kicking, you're punching, you're ducking, you're weaving to avoid incoming damage. So I think that's a bit more of a somewhat brighter future.
So we have a... basically, we've talked about the Move, we've talked about Kinect. Other things that we had shown today were the first console that doesn't require glasses.
Mm.
And that was the Nintendo's It Prints Money principles of game design now, of just changing the design slightly and creating the Nintendo 3DS, which is a... parallax screen 3D display on, you know, basically the DS, as well as having an analog stick on it now, too.
Mm.
Just say yes or nay, who here got to play with it?
Yes.
Nay.
Nay? Okay, so I got to play it as well. For those who did get to play it, tell us what you thought.
It's interesting. I mean... I'm not a big fan of the whole 3D movement. Nintendo, they're geniuses because they figured out how to do it without glasses, and it's like the peak of this whole 3D storm going on. I thought it was really cool. I'm more excited about the possible software, like Metal Gear,
mm-hmm.
Solid 3, which is like one of my favorite games ever. They had a demo for it on there, and that drove me pretty wild. That was actually, I thought, that was the best looking
Wait, they actually had a demo for Metal Gear?
It wasn't an actual playable thing. It was more like a tech demo. Like
just the video?
Yeah. Like, did you see Mario Kart there? And
I saw Pilot Wings, and I saw Star Fox, and I saw the little 3D demo with the augmented reality.
What's that?
It was basically you had target practicing, and so you had to move around a little one-up, you know, the question mark box on a little piece of paper, and that was like a QR code, essentially, that provided a spatial representation of where it's supposed to affect the area. So the cameras were able to actually warp the space around it and place objects relative to the plane existence of that little box, essentially. Mm. And so you'd shoot targets, and then all of a sudden you'd see this gravity well form on the table through the camera. Like, you were actually seeing it dip down and then blush up and down, like, you know, like a trampoline almost.
Huh.
Rubber sheet paper kind of thing.
Right, like that. Remember Black Hole, that movie?
Exactly.
Yeah, like the opening credits of that?
I don't know, Sam. What do you think? But it was kind of interesting. And then you shoot the targets. You look inside where the little, you know, box is supposed to be, because the one of the targets is actually down in a crevasse now. Mm. Crevasse.
Yeah.
I love saying crevasse. But it was really interesting. Where they were doing it was not optimal for a demo like that, because you had a single light source coming straight down.
That's true.
So your the actual 3DS was actually a shadow above the target, so it would constantly unlock.
Yeah.
And so, like, when you were actually doing it, you eventually had to shoot this dragon statue, which came to life, and shoot it, and then it became a statue again.
Yeah.
And it was definitely an interesting concept, and I think it would be interesting to see if they start doing, like, say, citywide, you know, QR codes randomly around. Hmm. Like, it'll be, like, gotta catch them all Pokemon style, I bet, soon, but I think I personally thought the 3DS is an interesting idea, but some of the glaring issues are the fact it fucking has some pardon my language, but it has some serious glare issues.
Yeah, they gotta fix that screen.
I literally had to have the screen 3 inches in front of my face to make sure I didn't get a glare off my own glasses. Wow. And then lose the 3D image. Like, as soon as I got a disproportional glare in one of my glasses, I lost the image and started getting a weird headache.
And that's why you pay $40 for a Mad Cat's accessory. Anti-glare, baby!
Ugh. I wear contacts. I wasn't wearing glasses playing the 3DS, but I had the same, like, blurry issues, too. And I tried, you know, readjusting my eye level, you know, a bit, and didn't really fix it. I had to do, playing Star Fox, I really had to readjust, like, my eyes a lot to, you know, focus on the different enemies flying around the screen.
Mm.
That didn't quite stop my enjoyment of the game, because it was Star Fox 64, and I was playing the first level, so that was pretty awesome. I think the most, the coolest thing about the 3DS is the 3D slider. You could actually adjust how 3D the image looks.
The one thing I thought sucked particularly, though, with Nintendo is they were giving no details to the hardware specs whatsoever.
I asked a bunch of questions. No one knew anything, or they just didn't give a shit.
The one thing is they had an army of models showing them off. It was like they during the Nintendo press conference, they had literally 500 of these models. I think it was from Ford modeling agency and Push. Come out,
right,
all wearing matching outfits, showing off the DSs attached to their belts, essentially, because, you know, tethered to, like, chains. And so they had a couple Nintendo representatives actually in the booth where they actually were showing off.
I didn't see any.
Yeah, but they were all wearing the blue Nintendo shirts, and I was talking to this one who's really cool. She's half Japanese, half American, and she was worked on localization.
Okay.
But I was talking to her, and she was actually able to help answer a few questions, but she said, we're not allowed to tell you the specs. This is all about just seeing it. But the one thing is, the slider is electrical. So, based on the kind of technology that they have for that, the way it works is, with most of those 3Ds where it is something that's controlled by just a non-mechanical system, it basically uses the same technology as an interlaced signal. So, it's changing the pattern of how the 3D image is. So, you're getting an interlaid over thing. Like, a lot of these 3D games, like Sony's TVs that are coming out for 3D, are 360 frames a second, 360 hertz. And so they draw a frame for the left eye, a black frame, and a flame for the right eye, and do that all succinctly. That's what you're doing, is you're getting two signals at 1080p, each taking a frame up. So you're getting a 120 hertz signal in left eye, black, and right eye, because the persistence of vision then clears each time, because that's what a lot of the blurring effect is.
Hmm.
So the way this is probably working is they probably are not giving that, you know, black frame, or, you know, it's very limited in how they're doing it, I think. So what do you think of the 3DS, Jeff?
I think it's more interesting in what will be Sony's move now.
Hmm.
Like, Nintendo finally has the hardware now, it appears, to actually match them in making these polygonal games now. I think Nintendo handheld family, I think, are these more or less simple 2D games.
Hmm.
You see the PSP is like full console quality games.
Hmm.
But the 3DS, it levels the playing field. And now you have Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater running on the DS. That could sway a few people over to the Nintendo family now.
The few people who don't already have it.
Exactly.
Well, that's true. But I mean, some people who are like, you know, Nintendo DS, the kiddie system. You know, you buy it for Kirby, you buy it for Mario. You know?
Right.
I think the one thing also that's funny about it is the fact that they're really pushing locational-aware video games with the 3DS. It's something that's been very popular in Japan because everyone has... I mean, like, literally, they say, I think everyone in Japan owns a DS.
Mm-hmm.
It's sold, like... they've sold more DSs, DS Lites, than there are actual citizens in Japan, they say.
So I think the big question would be, is, did we actually need the 3DS in the first place? Considering that, you know, you have a DS... Then you came with a DSi.
I think a more appropriate question would be the DSi XL. I think that would be a more appropriate question.
I can see for old, like, I know a couple old people who have a 3 DSL just for, like, the brain age games. Like, a couple of, like, retirement homes have it for them. And also the size of doing that cooking app that they have in there, it becomes more of a tool. Like, the fact they actually license the Palm OS and you can actually get a full, you know, user interface with other apps if you wanted to, supposedly.
And the DSi XL is also doubling as an ebook reader now.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they have that that cartridge, like 100 books for like $20 or whatever.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's more than just the games for the XL.
And from the talk of Ottawa when he was talking about the 3DS when he brought up on stage for at the press conference, he's very much they talked about 3D movie titles coming to the device.
There was a trailer for a. How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, the partnerships with DreamWorks, Warner Brothers, and Disney. And that in itself is actually probably one of the big things, is the 3D movies are... I mean, while I'm not a terrible fan of a lot of 3D movies, when it comes to animated titles, those can be easily turned into 3D movies and are perfect for that kind of platform.
Right.
I think what's really interesting is that means that they're focusing on non-game content for their system now, which means... They were entirely pushing wireless connectivity and shared internet connectivity for multiplayer games now, which has been the exact opposite of what they were doing before with like the Wii, which had the friend code.
Yeah.
The grumbling here shows you how much we love the friend code. Hey, what was it, 26 character number you have to add to like play friends online?
That's like trying to remember the Mike Tyson password, you know?
Yes.
But I think what's going to be interesting is you're going to have that mesh topology network. I think you're going to see them using that new 802.11 standard that allows, like, say, one DS finds another one, connects to another one. I mean, you start seeing this interesting kind of idea of where, when the Nintendo DSs came out, only one person had to have the game.
Right.
So, that kind of networking feature is becoming more of a predominant feature, I think, and it's going to be over the internet.
Well, maybe in that sense... that sense, Nintendo has learned from some of its partners. Xbox Live and PSN allows you to connect easily to your friends and partnerships. It seems as though this show is all about Sony and Microsoft trying to adopt Nintendo's audience.
Mm-hmm.
But with Nintendo opening the gates, allowing you to connect easily, they're kind of doing the same. So the playing field is starting to level out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think Nintendo is still...
They're still the king.
They're still the front runner.
They want you to, you know, wait at their gate. And that's what their booth felt like, right?
Well, I think what's funny is, besides the Kinect that Xbox showed off, they showed off their new Xbox 360. And the first things that he said was, one, took less power, and two, was whisper quiet.
Whisper quiet.
And one of the other funny things about the new Xbox is it can no longer make a red ring of death. Did anyone hear about that?
Yes, I have.
Because
that should have been their
from day one.
No, it's not that it can't do a Red Ring of Death, because it's, you know, it's not broken. It can't tell you it's broken because it does not have a Red Ring of Death
option. It's basically difference.
Yeah, it's basically like we don't ever want to hear Red Ring of Death again.
Right. It's the hands over the ears.
Sony's been doing that for a while.
An interesting play as well is that people who were invited to the Xbox press conference event got an Oprah pulled on them.
Right.
Everyone gets a brand new Xbox!
I heard this
and that
story.
That was the end of the press conference with a very awkward him just standing there saying, that's nice.
Is Microsoft actually branding this as a slim Xbox?
It fit inside the old chassis of the other one by like a few millimeters.
Right, it's slimmer, but are they calling it the official like Xbox Slim?
No, they're just calling it the new Xbox. The new Xbox.
Like new Coke. That like what the, I don't understand like what's their selling point for it?
The Wi-Fi is new standards.
Yeah,
they're faster.
The Wi-Fi is built in. They have three USB ports in the back, HDMI port. I think it's 1.4 HDMI as well.
Right.
Is the Kinect going to come with it?
Kinect does not come with it.
That's, major fail.
They still don't have a price listed for the Kinect either. That was like the dumbest. Like you're announcing this device coming out on November 4th.
Right.
And you don't tell anyone the price.
I read on a Kotaku maybe that Target had it listed for $150. It's Kotaku, I don't know.
Note to the audience who can't see this, I raised my eyebrow going, what?
on the internet.
It must be true. It's Kotaku, run by, you know, John
Dean.
The internet told me.
You know, Kotaku, it's perfectly legitimate. Same organization that bought the iPhone that was stolen.
Genius.
Now we're throwing stones.
Hey, you know, paycheck journalism. It worked for Frost Nixon. But, one of the other big issues I think that was with E3 this year particularly is media partnerships. The fact that Spike TV, which is the Viacom property, MTV, all that stuff like that, were given exclusive rights to broadcast and take photos of both of the Xbox press events. One was the Natal experience on the 13th, which is an extra day added to the whole Xbox hoopla.
Mm-hmm.
And then also during the press conference event, which was broadcast live on Spike TV. The other thing also is that only G4, owned by Comcast, is allowed to broadcast live from the show floor. And I think it was also IGN is allowed to stream online live, who they partner with YouTube to do that, which is owned by Fox News Corp. And so, I'm not a trained journalist. I'm just a jackass who started a podcast, but as people who are legitimately paid by large organizations, what do you guys think of this?
That was bull. I mean, your job as a marketing team of a company that's selling a product, you would like to get this as many outlets as you can.
Hmm.
And having, say, it was an IGN with the floor rights, the IGN?
It was IGN for streaming rights on the floor.
Right.
Broadcast rights over TV on the floor was Comcast and G4. And then broadcast of major events from Microsoft was done by Viacom, MTV.
So what does that serve Microsoft? Just to have a certain amount of quality control over what's shown? I really don't get why they were limited to those certain outlets.
Well, you look at a lot of the press events, they're very much like rock, like, particularly Xbox. Last year when they had the Beatles come on stage, they had, you know, Ringo Starr and Paul McCartney come on stage, Yoko Ono and Olivia Harrison as well. They had E.T. director.
Spielberg
come on stage.
He said it became Italian.
And I know this might sound very racist, but seeing that man in life, he looks like old Jewish guy Max from...
Wow.
Like, I never realized, like, how, like, you know, how very, very Jewish he looks like.
E.T.
It's the immigrant story.
All he wants to do is go home.
Let him go to his homeland. The land of his people. He wandered in the desert of San Fernando Valley for too long.
But enough tree jokes. Never know.
Oh, we're all gonna die.
Oh, Holocaust, you never happened. Okay.
But the fact that you're having this kind of like celebrity focus to these events. Like, for example, during the Natal event, there was a red carpet, and I saw Billy Crystal, and man, he's looking old.
Yeah.
He's been looking pretty rough for the, for like 5-10 years.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the big thing is, like, they had, like, Entertainment Tonight covering a red carpet event for, you know, the press conferences, and also for, you know, the Natal experience. Mm. What do you think of the fact that B-list celebrities and old celebrities are now being brought to these things for the fact of, you know, double, you know.
Well, they gotta eat, first of all. It's a paycheck. But, you know, I'm not against the whole broadcasting thing. I think it just, you know, it's a way of gauging response from public who really can't get into the show to begin with. So why not allow them to see what they're gonna be paying for? You know, if they...
But it's that exclusive rights thing.
Let me ask you this, though.
Sure.
If you wanted to broadcast from the floor and then the E3 Gestapo comes out and like beats you down and takes your camera because someone else has exclusive rights, how does that make you feel?
Then I'll be butthurt.
Well, like, there's actually a...
I'd be very...
On Lee Laporte, who's a fan of The Buzz, which, you know...
Oh, like, I heard his story!
He is famous for doing live streaming now. He has a backpack. He actually was the first man to ever... He won an award from... what's that company who does the Guinness Book of World Records, but for anything? They have the Yellow Jackets...
Ooh, I don't know. Can I get some background on this guy?
Lee Laporte originally was the host of the Screensavers on Tech TV. Right. When G4 bought... When Comcast bought Tech TV and merged it with G4, it became Tech TV G4, and they moved all the production down to L.A., where, you know, Morgan Webb, Adam Sessler from X-Player now, Kevin Rose became the host, and they basically liquidated the stocks without giving all the hosts their money. So Lee Laporte, being angry at it, started his own network on streaming, you know, internet, and he started Twit, which is, you know, This Week in Tech, and then he did This Week in MacBreak Weekly, This Week in Google, and it's gone to where he's live streaming 7 shows a day. And he was at South by Southwest, and he had a backpack, and he was live streaming the entire time, too, using, you know, wireless cards in this backpack. It's got this Linux-based thing. And he actually live-streamed him crowd surfing. This 50-year-old man crowd surfing.
That's awesome.
And what was... He was actually... He came down. I saw him actually in the main hallway, but he couldn't go into the show floor with it. But, you know, he brought up to a lot of his fans that he wasn't allowed to live-stream. This is where people found out that there was exclusive rights to the broadcast. And, it's basically, you know, this is particularly a journalist event.
Pretty much.
Journalists and buyers. People who are the guys who decide we want to have, like, say, Bulletstorm, or my dad had Very Good Burgers as their PR list on. You know, Vanguard Chronicles 2, or, you know, name the game. They decide to put into their store. Those are the buyers who, you know, contact them and say, yes, we want to bring those games on our store. It's them and media, and that's all it is, really, and industry people.
Right.
And to make it so that the media is fenced in for what they can do, especially in this era where anyone can post a video to YouTube, I found very repugnant.
Yeah.
And you already, like, I've talked to developers. A lot of them aren't even allowed to go to GDC. They have to pay for themselves, or to SIGGRAPH, which is another popular graphic design and graphic, you know, science, convention. They're basically limiting the flow of, you know, information from the developers, and also from, you know, what can be out there. I mean, a while ago there was a lot of backlash, I remember, of saying, you know, don't judge a game from what E3 is because, you know, it's not finished.
Right.
And I can see maybe that might be the reason why they're doing it this way. But at the same time, why do it that way when we should just be teaching the end user that software changes and, you know, develops over time.
Maybe it's one of those things where I think Microsoft, Sony, and probably the big boys want extreme control over how things are presented.
Mm-hmm.
You have Johnny with his little blog. He comes in, films something from the wrong angle and exposing some wires or something, or catches the glitch on camera and freezes and pokes to the internet. And, you know, their product looks bad. I mean, in a way, I have to understand that, but at the same time, you can't handcuff the media. You can't.
Mm.
Because you know why? It also it has a way of getting out. It does have a way of getting out. I mean, you think that, oh, yeah, I've got it under control because I've got this guy in my pocket, this guy in my pocket, this guy in my pocket. It's going to get out. If there's something...
So you're saying that it's the Princess Leia to Admiral Tarkin, the more you grasp, the more you find slip through your fingers, you know, metaphor? Yeah, you like that Star Wars reference? That works?
Like that,
that works, that works.
Just get this walking carpet out of my way.
Give us a little... But, some of the other things. What were some particular games you guys thought might be innovative from this year's
E3? Oh, yes, the games. Finally, let's talk about some games.
Oh, man. Hey, this is a science podcast. We talk about technology first, games second.
It's too bad. Well, innovative.
Are we talking about pure innovation or fun? Innovation with fun.
I don't know. I
just innovation first, and then what was the game you thought was fun?
That's a good question.
That is a great question. I don't know any
game that was innovative.
Conduit.
Oh, actually, you know what? Yeah, you're right. Conduit too. You're right.
Why is that innovative?
Because it's making the Wii.
It's literally
not
pushing,
look like the Wii.
Yeah, it's literally pushing the limits of the Wii.
Like the graphics in the Conduit 2, if you saw it like without knowing it was on the Wii, you would not know it was on the Wii.
I actually didn't know it was a Wii game until the rep told me it was a Wii game.
It's really solid. It's really solid. The graphics are like, yo, this could be maybe PS2 plus kind of graphics.
Mm. Conduit 2?
Conduit 2.
It was Conduit 1.
That was a crappy game. I saw that at the New York Comic Con Fest convention, and I was like, just playing, like, that's nice. Bolo gun. That sounds like some Turok level shit right there. Like, dude, you have something that burrows into their brain too for a gun? Oh, really? Okay,
I think they've addressed that, and they've cleaned it up.
Okay.
I mean, for the most part, from what I've played, which wasn't really a lot.
Mm. We're talking graphics.
Like user interface or, you know, game, dynamics kind of thing. Like, graphics are one thing. Pushing hardware is going to happen. I mean, with the PlayStation 3 when it first came out, all the games look really shitty compared to an Xbox, because the fact is the Xbox was a development kit that was made by Microsoft for Visual Studio, and actually, originally, the first one was made by Apple. It was actually Xcode, just modified for, you know, running that... Hey, that's something about media leaking out. Back when they showed a lot of the Xbox 360 games, all the dev kits were two networked G5 towers. Macintosh. I personally thought, like, an innovative game. While we harp about the idea of, you know, the whole casual game crap and, you know, getting people in here with these accessories, Ubisoft's Fitness Evolved was, I think, I see the face, it's a little bit, you're like, yeah.
Deep breath.
But, like, some of the things where it scans your body, knows your height, and creates the menus where you touch it, and then has it look at your body temperature for how you're gauging your workout, and then tells you if you're doing a Pilates thing wrong because your skeletal track isn't properly set. Some of that is, while it's not the traditional game, it has so many... on the level of hardware they're using, so many amazing ideas for concepts of both augmented reality and things that could be brought into other games.
Isn't EA doing that right now as well with EA Active 2.0 or whatever they're using right now?
I don't know about that.
EA 2.0, what we saw
EA Active,
at the
Prince of EA Fitness. It's the same thing where You know, if it tells you what you, you know, how to exactly do a certain move.
Yeah, but it's not really.
I think that has more depth to it, but it's about the same.
I think that's more of an instructional thing. I think the Ubisoft one actually took your body frame into account and actually, you know, adjusted your height and weight and things like that, which you would have needed the Wii balance board for before, but now it works through a camera.
I mean, the one thing is also with that is like during the kickboxing demo they showed. They had two different people doing it. One person was like 6 foot, one person was 4 foot. And so the kick, the hit box normally would have resized to match their body type automatically. And so when you had two people, it resized for them as well. So it was within the optimal position for what they were supposed to do. And just from like a pure Minority Report user interface, like it was just really cool. Like the buttons where you would touch to turn new, you know, pick different game settings would come to your hand if you reach towards that area, and then you could like squeeze your hand or, you know, tap it and it would actually work. And I thought that was really innovative, and I played it, and they like it can tell that you're not doing a Tai Chi move right. It can tell you're not doing a, you know, a yoga position right either, and it calls you on it until you get it just right and hold it for several seconds when you finally explode into an aura of color.
Nice.
But I thought that was—I think that was innovative as a user interface technology thing.
It is. I'm just waiting to see some more killer apps that will get more mainstreamers. Well, not mainstreamers, more the core gamers into it. I'm still waiting for that Shaw Brothers Kung Fu game, man. Seriously.
My freaking ears.
No, it's like it would be great is if they do a Shaw Brothers style kung fu game. You have to like do the hit. You hold it for several seconds, and then you have to twist your hips like you've cracked their back, and you're like completed.
Yes, that'd be pretty cool.
Indeed.
Excellent. Talking about excellent.
Where are we going with this?
Mortal Kombat 4, the return of the franchise after the fall and death of Midway, being picked up by Warner Brothers.
Is it the fourth official numbered?
I think it's going by 9, or is it 8 or 9 right now?
I don't know. I know Silent Hill 8 is happening.
Right.
I don't know, man. Freaking Mortal Kombat. It's like Mortal Kombat 3 Ultimate Edition for N64. Mortal Kombat 3 Ultimate Edition. Blah blah blah.
But you know what? Mortal Kombat pretty much sank since its debut. No, it hit 2, then it went downhill from there. But the one game that I think was the most underrated in the franchise, Mortal Kombat Shaolin Monks.
That's the brawler, right?
The brawler, okay. With the 2-player brawler. When you went through the entire Mortal Kombat.
Were you playing Lao Kang or whatnot?
Yes. The combo fest.
No, yeah. Lao Kang has got the hat.
That's
Kung Lao.
Kung Lao.
Around.
Whatever. F you, sir. F you. Get out of my podcast.
You can do it here. You can do it even there.
How about, Kung Lao.
Right. And Kung Lao and the guy with the headband.
Liu Kang.
Whatever. That was.
I see what you did there.
That was a great take on the classic beat 'em up game.
Was that a good game?
Huh?
Was that a good game?
It was an excellent game.
I liked it.
If you like brawling games, there's environmental effects. I think there were timing effects too. If you get to a certain location at a certain time, you could open up extra levels and things like that. Fatalities were there.
So it was basically the stuff that pissed me off at Super Mario World when I wanted to open up Chocolate Land.
Yes.
I hated that shit.
Wait, what?
Alright, level 5 of Chocolate Island Land in Super Mario World, where you had to, like, get the certain amount of coins in a certain time frame from the 4 different sections to open up different pathways so you could get, get with a 99 star plus. Remember that?
Yes.
That shit pissed me off so much!
Area of the game in general. Like, I replay that game pretty often because it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But once you get to Chocolate Island, I'm like, all right.
Because it literally feels like that. You're passing some chocolate.
Right.
But, by the way, talking about Mario Bros. Games, Super Mario All-Stars with World, best game ever.
Oh, well, yeah.
Because, you know, it's not just Super Mario Bros. All-Stars, which is taking all the old games to 16-bit,
right.
But it's adding World of it, too.
Right.
Blows my mofo mind.
What if it added Yoshi's Island as well?
That would be sick. It's like the ultimate collection.
Can we talk about Nintendo now?
Yes, let's talk about Nintendo.
All right.
Mortal Kombat.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, let's go back to that.
We didn't talk about Mortal Kombat at all.
We have to. I mean, this is the Phoenix rising from the grave.
We got Ed Boon and John Tobias coming back as producers for the game.
Mm-hmm.
We also got a trailer that was leaked a week before E3 came out, having Michael J. White.
He's on the floor. Did you see him?
Yeah, I saw him. He's very nice. He doesn't sound all grim and gruffly like he does normally. He's like, "How y'all guys doing?" It's like very California surfer guy voice.
Cool, though.
He's a very nice guy. And then also you had him playing Jax, and they're taking it from this point of view where it's all real. It's basically they're pulling a Batman Begins with Mortal Kombat,
yes.
It directed by David Fincher. You know, it's very much this kind of like 7S color.
Fincher or Flincher?
Say it right. I don't know how to say it right, okay? You say it.
It's Fincher.
Fincher, thank you.
I do like Flincher, though. It's like, man.
It is. It was a Flincher. But it's very gritty. Baraka, who was originally this, you know, Netherrealms crazy warrior assassin with all scary teeth, is actually a crazed plastic surgeon who's into body modification and installs blades in his hands. Reptile's actually a Harlequin child,
yes.
Defiguration who has lived on past childbirth.
That was a genius move.
That was extreme.
I would never have thought of that.
Yeah, that was actually like really scary too, because they
right.
Showed the Harlequin pictures and Harlequin.
Right, they the real footage of the baby with the
yeah.
Actual disease. That was genius.
Yeah, and like they had you know, basically the character who was already a realistic character to begin with, Johnny Cage, is the first one to die in the trailer. It's like, alright, everyone else is now real. Johnny Cage, you're superfluous. Let's go. And then they had Sonya Blade being played by the lovely Jeri Ryan.
Yeah.
Can I say one thing about that, though? Like, this whole, like, everything must be realistic movement. What happened to fantasy? Like,
you know what the thing is? I had a discussion with this guy at this party after night, last night, and it's called Techno Glorious.
Yeah.
And every other word he was saying was realism. Realism, like, The Wire was so real. I'm like, dude, I'm from Baltimore. The Wire is not real. Most people are too drugged out to actually do anything. You know, they are not attacking people like you think they are. They're only killing other drug dealers.
Right. But, if you think about a movie like, I don't know, anything from the 80s, like Labyrinth or Dark Crystal, and like, if it was made now, it'd be like, no, it's gotta be gritty and realistic. Mm-hmm. Like,
it's like Pan's Labyrinth.
Huh?
Pan's Labyrinth, yeah.
Pan's Labyrinth kept the fantasy.
It was a fantasy.
Alive.
That's the one
island in the sea of realism.
Right. Well, everything else has to be so gritty and dark.
I think Europe is having that resurgence of fantasy right now, because Europe was so much the gritty realism, like the whole French movies and stuff like that, being like, it's like, my life is so terrible. Hola.
Oh, but you also have, like, the Amelie guy.
Mm. Oh, he's doing fantasy. But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's the new fantasy stuff. You know,
right.
That's all coming out here. But we're not talking about fantasy. We're talking about Mortal Kombat.
But it ties into that because Mortal Kombat is fantasy. There's magic. There's a thunder god.
Ghosts.
There's an alternate realm.
Dragons.
Arm.
But, like, they show a picture of, like, basically, the storyline is, like, Scorpion is brought in by the cops saying, we're putting you in the tournament to, you know, the Mortal Kombat tournament. Which is supposed to be like an underground fight club now, to, you know, capture a bunch of these guys who are terrible guys. And they're talking about, you know, the Reptile, who's like this crazy serial killer, and, you know, Barak, who's a crazy serial killer, you know, as I mentioned, you know, plastic surgeon, you know, to catch who killed Johnny Cage, who was a patient of his or something like that. And, you know, we also found out the person who killed your family is in the tournament too. It's like, they show him a picture, like, it's a quick flash, very much, you know, 7-esque style, of a robotic looking guy who's supposed to be Sub-Zero. And they talk about Sang-Soon, and I didn't really get the whole Sang-Soon part, because, I don't know, it didn't make sense to me when I was watching it.
He's like a gangster now, like kind
yeah.
of like
yeah.
the Mandarin Iron Man?
I guess so, but like...
They just made him look like a mob boss, if anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was interesting, because the gritty realism part of this, they use this as kind of a viral marketing thing, and everyone supposedly is going to be in it. They made the trailer for like under $7,000, too. Because everyone was doing it as a favor to, you know, them, so... To the original filmmaker, but... You know, to have both a movie and a game... The game's being fantasy-based. It's still a fantasy original Mortal Kombat. But to have this new movie come out... Do you think that might dilute the brand of Mortal Kombat? To have this gritty, realistic game and then have...
Oh, no. If anything,
I don't think so.
This trailer alone just sparks so much interest. And if anything, it's just going to, you know, make everyone want to play the game.
That plus, was it announced from the director that he's making a realism?
Yeah, like he announced this was basically his
pitch.
This was his pitch to make a realistic, you know, thing, and it let every forum on the internet was on fire from this thing.
I mean, because you can't make Mortal Kombat at least with a touch of fantasy. Like, how do you explain Goro? You can't explain that realistically and say, oh yeah.
Well, you could have Goro be like, he could be like, you know,
thank Gary Coleman's moron.
No, like, Goro could be like a Quaid from Total Recall.
Quato,
yeah.
Like, leader of the resistance.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, it's a Siamese twin. He's got an extra, like, arm, you know?
Oh, no, no.
But, but yeah,
or
so...
yes.
But, okay, so Mortal Kombat's one of the big games that's basically being reignited for a franchise. Another game I think we could bring up as well is Sega's doing Sonic the Hedgehog 4.
Yes.
Return to form. It's back in 2D with 3D elements. Did anyone get to play it at the show for? Mm-hmm.
I think we all did, right?
Most of us played it.
Yeah.
Not all.
And he's spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning around the room.
Let me jump in real quick with this one. Yes. Alright, I played the game. You know, they played that one level at 3.
The grassy knoll level.
Right.
The grassy knoll level.
Grass hill.
Oh, okay.
Grass hill.
All right.
Let me just say this.
This is Sonic, not Shadow the Hedgehog.
It's like, all right, Sonic, I'll take you on the rifle from the rooftop.
Where's that damn fourth chaos emerald?
The game is well polished. Mm-hmm. I'll give it that. The game looks solid. Looks great. Does have that 16-bit S look to it.
Mm-hmm. For the butt.
Oh yeah, there's a butt. There's a
shoe.
Not a
shoe,
but
shoe drop.
He's a little slow. For a Sonic the Hedgehog game, he's a little slow. He's a little like underwater-ish. I mean, there's areas where he does pick up some speed, but like when he just starts walking, it's like
it reminded me of Mario.
Huh?
It reminded me more of Mario, because when you have Mario move, there's a slow build up there. There's a
momentum. No, but I mean when Mario walks, he's still walking pretty good.
You know what it reminded me
of? In all these 16-bit Sonic games, where Sonic wasn't blazing, he always felt a little bit clunky.
Sonic's never been like speed of light off the bat.
And it just goes. You let it, like, I remember from Sonic the Hedgehog 3. Remember the water maze levels, like the one where it's like you have to figure out to get around so you don't drown.
Yeah.
The Bubbleopolis or whatever they called it.
Bubbleopolis. I don't know. There's one of those in every Sonic game.
It was like the Mayan temple-ish looking one. It's like you just let him go. You let go of the controller, and it has all those chargers as he's going through all the loops.
Exactly.
And he's like,
you don't get that with this game just yet. It's still early, so we can't say anything. But.
The kind of feeling I got from this game was it felt more like the Sega CD version of Sonic. Like,
really?
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I love Sonic CD.
Like, you know how he had that kind of, like, his feet would, like, hit the ground and be, like, a little slow, so he'd have the full animation of his foot movement?
Yeah.
And so it was kind of a little slow off. I mean, it felt a little bit like,
Sonic 1?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it had that element of Sonic 1 with it. So, you know, it's basically them starting from scratch, and
I think it's perfect. So.
And they're doing the episodic thing with it, though.
Yeah, downloadable.
Do you think that's is that just like a money grab, or do you think that's a good thing?
I'm gonna say a piece money grab, but I'm not totally with it. I think it should just go full CD.
Okay,
give us a whole thing.
That no one would buy it.
Why?
Because it's not Sonic Colors.
People are buying Sonic Unleashed, and that's like.
Sonic in the Werehog.
He has werewolves.
I mean, it wasn't like the greatest game in the world. People were buying it. I think people buy it.
Sonic 4 is only episode 1 because, frankly, Sega has no faith that the public's going to actually buy a full retail 2D Sonic.
That's exactly it. They think no one will buy it, and that's why they're making Sonic Colors to begin with.
Right. Isn't that just making an assumption that nobody would buy it?
Now, Is it Sega team or is it the Sonic team that's doing this?
It's Sonic team in conjunction with Dimps, who made the Sonic Rush series.
Interesting.
And they're also doing Sonic Colors, which makes me wonder how stretched that team is.
Right.
But both games seem pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm sure I'll eat my hat when I play the final version and find out, you know, the Sonic cycle, you know, like oh, we were all so excited, and now, now we have it. And exactly. wah, wah, wah. It bites. But I don't, I'm hoping that won't be the case.
I mean, looking back at Sonic, I remember when the Dreamcast came out, and Sonic Adventure came out, and they had that ripping guitar track.
Yes.
And you watch the trailer for that, and it gets you like right in the mood for that game.
They're so good at butt rock.
Butt rock, nice. But like, I rented the Dreamcast from Blockbusters for 3 weeks to beat that game.
Mm-hmm.
The first level when you're running down that pier.
Oh, the whale!
And
that
the whale
is so classic.
To this day, people still quote that as a an ideal of speed in a game.
I still get tingles from that.
I showed him that.
Whale tingles.
And I was like, yo, check this out. And it happened, and he hit the floor.
Well, like what's really cool is the fact that like with the Dreamcast particularly, it had the VGA adapter made by Sega, so you could then watch it in 1024 by 768. So basically, it was like the first HD console.
Yeah, those games are beautiful. They still are.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. Like, hopefully, we might get something like that again. Mm. You know, the idea of like the speed capability with Sonic, and I think that Sonic 4 maybe might return some of the greatness back to Sonic. But I think, do you think that Sonic is will never be able to come back to where he was? I mean, Mario still today is actually loved by everyone. And every game he does, even for how weird it is, like the one with the water pack.
Sunshine.
Thank you. Even that one, like, which a lot of people complained about, still people loved.
Sure. Well,
and so Mario's never died except for maybe Mario Missing. Which is why. But
Hotel Mario.
Sonic is pretty much, you know,
well,
got leprosy, I think, by a lot of people.
Well, I don't think he's at a point of no return, but I think this Sonic 4 is pretty much the deciding factor. I mean, if this doesn't go well, people can't deal with another failure in the Sonic franchise.
So Sonic is the Robert Downey Jr. mascots. Yeah.
I think they're hoping that this will be Sonic's Iron Man.
No, stop. That could be a character in the next game. Yeah. Just stop that talk, man.
Pretty much.
Iron Sonic.
But going back to what you were saying earlier, I don't think they're doing the episodes as a way of just testing interest. Because, I mean, I was speaking with one of the guys on the team, and, I mean, they're even toying with the idea of how to incorporate Tails into, like, the future episodes.
You know what?
I like Tails.
Well about that,
I like Tails.
He said he's not close to the fact that they're going to bring back, you know, the friends.
Yeah.
He says that right now this episode is going to be about solo Sonic, just Sonic, and that maybe down the line they're going to introduce his buddies.
Well, he gave me a little more, like, less PR response.
Oh, nice.
With regard to that. He was saying pretty much they're just trying to figure out a way to, like, make a story with Tails without having it be cheesy. So, like, the fact that they're even thinking that far ahead makes me believe that it's not just a way of gauging interest with the first game. I think they're actually intend on doing future episodes.
Mm-hmm. I think the friends aspect of Sonic's universe, it wouldn't be so bad if Sega didn't allow his friends to be cooler than Sonic.
Mm-hmm.
You got Knuckles.
But Shadow comes with a gun, man.
Exactly. Knuckles had his spiky hair, the slick back, he had big
hands,
and spikes.
He had dreadlocks.
That's such a good point.
They had a character that was supposed to be the cooler, more attitude-filled mascot to counteract Mario. Knuckles comes out, he's a little bit more badass than Sonic. And then you have this April Fool's joke, which I thought was Shadow, with two guns dipped in black. I mean, he started to overshadow your own character.
Like, what if Luigi...
Overshadow, I see what you're
saying.
Could you imagine if Luigi became a badass and was more popular than Mario?
I hate what they did to Luigi, first of all. What did they do to him?
I'm a clumsy.
He's some kind of weird... He's some kind of weird, like, John Waters caricature. It's so bizarre.
I thought that was Luigi.
Waluigi?
Waluigi.
Nobody even knows. He's a mystery. What is he?
He rides it on a motorcycle and is like...
Oh, I saw Charles Martinet today. And I was like, you're right. They should make a Waluigi game. And he was like... Back to Sonic. It's funny how we say, like, you know, Sonic's dead and he's got to return. It's just us 20, 30-something old farts saying that.
That's true.
Kids love Sonic Unleashed and Shadow. And they're the ones, I mean, they make a new Sonic game every year.
Yeah.
Someone's buying these games, and it's these 7-8-year-olds.
They don't know any better.
Exactly.
and it's a game that gives you action without actually killing anything. It's just robots turning into little chicks that fly away.
Yeah. I think it's fantastic that Sega is, with this show showed me, they're giving us the best of both worlds. And one of those worlds, Sonic Colors, actually seems to, you know, it spoke to me a little bit. I mean, I saw a lot of Sonic 3 in the game when I played. And it's only Sonic, too. So there's no friends in that except for the new little alien dudes who are basically power-ups anyway, like the shoe or the shield.
And the Colors is also a mix of basically the 3D Sonic Adventure style and also 2D elements, right?
Mm.
Yeah, so
it's like, it was like the special levels from Super Mario, from Sonic 3, like when you had the half pipe.
God, yeah, God. Like,
well, that's right.
That special level was the best incarnation of the special levels they had yet. Like, you're like, almost got it. 50 rings, 100 rings, yes! No!
Oh, it's just Sonic 2. Sonic 2.
I'm sorry, Sonic 2. Sonic 3
had the globe.
I hated the globe.
That shit was, that crap was awful.
Because when you start going so fast, you literally,
it's
you
like,
were like,
you can't take it back. You already released it.
Sorry. So Sonic 3, like, you had to literally have the entire orb space, because it was that 3D space, in your memory to know exactly how everything was.
Yes.
And know when to jump. And literally, you could have parts of the world where there were like a 5-row, and if you were going so fast, you could hit the jump button and jump over 5 and then get back to where you had to go. Like, it moved so fast. You were like, it was like derby racing. It's like, turn left here, turn right, left, right, left, right, left, right, right.
That's the thing I hope Sonic 4 fixes, because all the previous games, that's how you got the Chaos Emeralds.
Yeah.
I hope they do the Chaos Emerald thing, you know, I want to say better, different. Sonic 4, you know, so it's more fun to get them instead of, you know, going through that punishment in order to, you know, get Super Sonic.
Well, to go from Sega, which Sega does, and Nintendo, classic 80s PR moves.
Blast processing.
Let's talk about Nintendo.
Yes.
We don't have a new Mario Bros. Game this year.
Well, Mario Sports Mix.
Shut up. Shut up. Don't ever speak that to me again.
What?
Huh? Galaxy 2 is already out, though.
Yeah, but it's like you said, not this year. It's like,
all right, what I mean, this E3, all right?
Okay.
Shut up.
There you go.
But we do have a return to form in the form of the soon-to-come Legend of Zelda, the Skyward Sword. Who here got to play that?
Couldn't get near it. I was waiting, actually, in front of a guy playing it for like a good 20 minutes, and finally I realized that you had to wait on a line like 30 feet away. So I look at the line, and it's, you know, it's a Mobius strip, and it was disheartening. I got to look at the game. I think it, half of me wants to say it looks good, but the other half, it just, for a Wii game, there's better looking Wii games out there.
I did get to play it. I got to play it at the Nintendo press event, which was quite humorous, because you had Shigeru Miyamoto-san. I'm sorry. I've been listening to Garnet Lee talk about, you know, him for too long, where it's like, now it's becoming green to me to say son and talking about him, because he's someone who actually deserves it. You know, he made the crack of our childhood. But when they first started it, they had him on screen, and everyone thought he wasn't going to be there. And they did this magical, like, it's like, we created this new Super Mario. You need a sword and a shield. So,
Zelda?
Yeah, for Zelda. For Zelda. And I mean, magically, he teleports in to explain it to someone who wasn't able to do it properly. And they legitimately started having issues with the connectivity to the Wii for the controller. And they said, too many Wi-Fi signals, making a pun at Steve Jobs with the recent iPhone launch. And I got to play it, and I enjoyed it. I think it's going to be interesting to see how they do it. They have a very much more Japanese aesthetic to some of the creatures this time. Like, what used to be goblin, the moblins or whatever, the goblins, mm-hmm. are now, like, these basically oni creatures. Like, you know, the stereotypical little horn with a big club or whatnot. And, just, you know, it, you have to have the Wii Motion Plus with it, which is one thing. And the game was basically created out of the Wii Sports Resort, which had the sword fighting, which was basically considered one of the most popular games.
It was the bow and arrow.
Yeah, and the bow and arrow, too, so... it was, it's good to see, adult Link again.
Well, we had him for a while.
Yeah, we had Twilight Princess, but that was a weird mechanic with the whole transforming into a wolf thing, so.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, he went Sonic.
Exactly, exactly. So none of you guys had a chance to play it all? You just saw it?
Just looked at it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the colors were pretty vibrant. Have you noticed that? Like, they're just more,
yeah.
like, pastel, almost.
I can see that. I think the one thing, though, is also, is I remember when I saw last year's Nintendo press conference, they were showing the video for Super Mario Galaxy 2. And at first I thought it was Super Mario Galaxy for the DS. Because I just come out of, you know, seeing Xbox press event just before that. And then showing all these games in 1080p on the large screens, and then seeing this grainy video on a large giant screen because of the fact it's only in 480p. I think that that's the one thing that's really holding back the Wii, is that it is something that is not HD yet.
Yeah.
You have Ottawa, who's you know the president of Sega of Japan, saying that they don't need HD. HD is not needed. It's all about the gameplay. Where does that, though, start to become an issue? Because now you're having a loss of... I mean, not necessarily a loss of gameplay, but this is kind of like detachment from the game, because it's starting to look old and dated. What do you guys think about it? Is the Wii just old and dated now, or do you think that it doesn't matter that it's not HD?
I don't think it matters. It is what it is. They said, this is what we're going to give you, and people bought it. Just based on... Going in, you knew it was going to be standard def. You going in, you knew the graphics weren't going to be... It wasn't going to be HD. It wasn't going to be high-power graphics. We say, hey, listen, this is like a GameCube, a step up. A little bit.
It's definitely surviving on... Well, obviously, I mean, everyone's got one and they love it. Surviving on the gameplay. But it is a product of its time, I guess. It came out 4 years ago. It was about... That was, you know, right before the huge HD boom.
Well, I mean, look at it, though. I mean, still... Since then, I mean, that thing is in just about every household in on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are... It's sold, like, in the holidays. It's been number one since its release. Like, it outsold everybody. I mean, you got, like the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. You know, these systems are freaking high-powered. And yet the Wii comes out and says, yeah, here we are. Take it. And like, people are snatching it up, selling it out, killing people, whatever... just to get their hands on this bad boy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The Wii! Like, I don't see myself fighting over a Wii, but people have done it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if the Wii had better hardware, you would see more ports of some of the Xbox and PS3 games that some of the more core, air quotes, gamers like to play. The Wii audience, sure, they don't care about the graphics. I mean... Wii Sports, for example, has a baseball game with hitters that have no arms. I mean, they really don't care. But if they want to get... Well, it's hard to say they want to get a broader audience because they sold so many, but if they want to get that more hardcore audience, they're going to have to step it up visually.
Well, the one thing that's interesting, though, is that this hasn't been necessarily the hardcore game stuff. It hasn't been indicative of an issue of just the Wii. I mean, GameCube was very much similar. They only had a few major adult titles, like... the Resident Evil Biohazard re-release and, you know, Resident Evil 4. And that was towards the later end of the run. I mean, the only major hardcore game, you could say, really, for the Wii that's out there was Sega's Conduit. That was the first, you know, major first-person shooter for the Wii. Besides, besides Resident Evil Wii Edition.
Also, don't forget Mad World came before that, too.
Okay.
That's also Sega as well.
That's just crazy Japanese games. talking about the... Let's go back to, like, the DS, though.
I think I'm surprised no one said anything about the Return of Kid Icarus.
Yeah. That was one of the...
a long time coming.
Pit is back.
That's a long time... I mean, I didn't see the trailer, but I mean, like... That's all everybody's been talking about is Kid Icarus.
How does the gameplay look for that, though? I haven't...
It looks just like...
Smash Brothers?
No, it's a shoot. It's like a space shooter. It looks like Sin and Punishment.
Space Harrier. Space Harrier. Like, yeah. I got, like, there will be some side scrolling aspects to it, but when you're traveling along, I just thought Space Harrier. You know, just traveling with, like, the guy.
I like how this discussion just keep going back to Sega. I love it.
Man, come on, back on.
I don't care, man.
Now, people have been clamoring for Kid Icarus forever. People have been clamoring for Kid Icarus forever, not the one of them. Did anybody buy it when it was released to Virtual Console?
I didn't even know it was released to Virtual Console.
it's only a 206 byte file for emulator.
You can put on a floppy disk, it's worth stealing.
Hey, you know what? Original Famicom was a floppy disk system. That's right, kids. Talking about consoles, one of the major things that was there was on live. We're talking about floppy disks for games, but this system doesn't even require that because all the games with partnerships with Ubisoft and a bunch of other companies is doing they're bringing like Assassin's Creed, Batman: Arkham Asylum to a streaming video game content platform, partnering up with ATI, NVIDIA, AT&T, BT, British Telecom, to provide this service. And the client just came, as of, I think, today, they released the clients for the Macintosh and for PC to play these games. And the interface is... very interesting because you'll see a bunch of video screens playing on your screen from the menu, and it basically looks like a wall of TVs, and they're all people playing their game in real time.
Really?
Yes, all those.
I didn't realize that.
That's all real time gameplay.
That's awesome.
So basically, the secret sauce is Dell backend servers at their data center with a modified virtualization software tool set, which is from open source tools that they said. The first year will be free, as all drug dealers do.
Mm-hmm.
The little taste, as the term is called, and then $4 a month for the $4.95 a month for the service. After that,
it's not 2 for $5.
Ooh,
what? A little half and half.
Right? Someone's showing their New York roots. Yeah. New York undercover. But so. And then games are going to be significantly cheaper than the retail value, but they're going to offer rentals, 3-day rentals, 24-hour rentals for like $3 and $4. What do you guys think of this?
You know what? If you had told me this a year ago, I would have said, you know, go screw yourself. I wouldn't want
to
do
it. A lot of people said that when the service first came out. They said it's not possible. Not possible to have 720p video content through streaming internet, and they require a 5 megabit per second internet connection to do this.
Do you think this is a gameplay killer?
I mean, like,
you know, when I put my hands on it, when I actually played it, you can't tell the difference between playing it on a disc. There's no difference. Yeah. There's no freaking difference.
And one of the advantages is that you don't need the high-end hardware anymore, right?
Yeah.
If a game's...
They even showed a version of it running on an iPad.
See, I was about to ask you that. Can you run it on, like, a crappy Intel...
you could run it on anything. The box is supposedly just a 500 megahertz little CPU system that just is pulling the content down with an encoder card to play out the video. So you're basically getting a video stream, and then your stuff's being uploaded. And they didn't explain the full secret sauce, but supposedly there's a lot of secure networks, you know, VPNs created when you're doing this connection. And so it's a private network then that's created, so you're getting optimal speed. Supposedly doing a partnership with BT where it'll become part of your service. Your set-top box will have it built into it. British Telecom, who provides internet service as well as television in Britain right now. They're partnering with a couple other cable companies, which they're not talking about yet, but, you know, in the United States, but it should be available soon. AT&T's being one of them with their AT&T U-verse. But it was interesting. We got you know, your view. What do you think about it?
I didn't even know it was at the show.
So, I want to say this.
I'm
also,
sorry.
Also, and this goes to you, Jeff, as well, because you were talking about a universal console.
Yeah. I mean, it runs on Mac.
This actually, we actually eliminate the whole thing of actually buying a new console. I don't have to buy a new console anymore.
Well, the thing is, the one thing, though, is these are, the virtualization is all Windows-based. You're going to have all these games be PC games. The multiplayer capabilities will be a combination of... He compared it very similar to how they have the Steam-powered platform. Steam having their new platform for Mac, and soon to have one for Linux as well. And also they announced it for PlayStation with Portal 2. But he said that they're very much trying to work it where it's the netcode will be combined between the original game and part of their stuff, so you'll have the interplay between multiple titles if the developer so wants to. So if you're playing on live, right now it's only within the on live service, but they're going to have it so it can then connect out to PC, Mac, or you know, console version in the future.
Can you imagine this being a console killer? I mean, honestly, because now, I mean, now you don't have to worry about the restrictions of what Sony has or what Nintendo has. You can just give it right to the player, right to the gamer. Here you are.
Well, some of the issues is that you have to have a very fast internet connection. With the FCC and telecom Comcast crap happening right now, the telecom industry doesn't want to update. And that's going to be the biggest killer for a service like this, is not having a fast enough pipe to the house. But for those who can get it, you know, your DOCSIS 3 internet from Comcast or Fios, this added as an option for an extra feature could literally kill a lot of consoles for hardcore gamers. I mean, you're going to see major titles come for this device. Giving you right now just 720p, but, you know, you're going to see 1080p, says, with probably in the next 9 months. And you'll be able to play full versions of the game for half an hour demos. Like, not just a demo level. So I can imagine, literally, because you can set it up to record your videos and your favorite videos. I could imagine an entire culture of people making speedruns. How fast can you beat the game, or how far can you get in 30 minutes?
Yes, right.
And so, like, I think things like that might be an interesting dynamic to see what happens. The rentals... We were joking about, you know, I was joking to, it was Joe Bentley is his name. He's the director of games and media development at OnLive. Said that they are going to, we were joking around about the whole, remember back in the days when you'd go to Blockbusters and rent on a Friday to return on a Monday?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And saying, like, they looked at some of their beta testers, and they will rent a game, because they've been testing it, and beat it in 20 hours. And if you beat the game, they'll actually reduce some of the value, the cost for the rental then, too, they said. And so, like, I asked them, what do you guys think about Gamefly and stuff like that? And they're like, yeah, we're competition for them. So he openly said that we're competition for Gamefly.
So let me ask you this. I didn't have any hands-on time with the service.
Mm-hmm.
With a hardcore PC gamer who's playing with a keyboard, a console, with an actual download on their computer... Mm-hmm. Tell the difference between that and the streaming service?
Being the PC gamer versus the one that's playing online?
Yeah.
If you're playing on a laptop that's not a gamer laptop, you will have... I saw it. 60 frames a second is what you'll get all the time. No matter what computer you're playing on. No matter what little tiny box you're playing on. So compare 720p playback at 60 frames a second... on a netbook versus, you know, choppy frame rate on a moderate laptop, you know, at a lower frame rate. I think that this could be something that could, for people who want gaming on the go and don't want to pay $2,000 for an Alienware laptop, I think if they can get the secret sauce to allow the internet, like the interplayerity between the multiple game platforms, between the normal PC gamer and that, like, even the video recording capabilities, where you can have... I can go and see my friends and see who's playing a game and actually see the screen of what they're playing. I think there's some weird privacy issues that's for a later discussion as well with that.
Mm-hmm.
But... Because, you know, they could be playing Sexy Beach Party.
But, what's wrong with that?
But I think I forgot to ask him if this you could actually hide your screen from what you were playing to the public. But I'm sure they probably would have that in there. It's something I can ask for later. But I think the idea that you could literally use this as a platform for tournaments as well. I mean, literally, you have a channel that you could pipe out for, like, switching between, you know, StarCraft 2. Mm. And they suppose they're going to have Activision releasing games as well. So, I think this could be something that allows people to get cheaper computers but have better gameplay. So, and the fact that this runs on Mac, Linux, they showed the iPad version, which was just a test demo, not a full thing. It was able to watch people playing games and had the controller joystick interface. They just don't know how to get the game playing just right.
Right.
You could play with the keyboard if you wanted to. You could play with the joystick if you wanted to. I mean,
the biggest issue right now is connection speeds.
Connection speeds. That's the biggest issue.
Mm. I could see this thing being like the electric or water-powered car, and like all the big console makers are going to like, you know, kill it.
The thing is that the guy back behind it, is from startup territory, doing a lot of, you know, big stuff. So I don't think he's in it to win.
He's right. He knows streaming. I think he did WebTV too, I think.
Yeah, he was one of the guys that started that.
We know what happened to WebTV.
They got bought by Microsoft for a shit ton of money. That's what happened.
Yeah.
But,
TV Plus.
I used to go to Sharper Image when I was 9 years old and use the WebTV to search the internet.
So did I.
Yeah, because it's like the libraries didn't have computers back then. You had to go find your internet some, you know,
Sharper Image.
My mom would be going around the mall and buying some stuff, like clothing,
massage chair, and
yeah, using my CityChat, the JavaScript based chat rooms
with your spy pen.
You remember that?
Yeah.
I'll say this: I went to Power Rangers chat rooms. Power Rangers chat rooms.
It was all about the Squaresoft stuff.
To close up, I just wanted to bring up location awareness in games. Nintendo is pushing Dragon Quest, which is very, very popular in Japan, particularly because when it's plugged into your console for the DS, it auto-senses who's around you and auto-creates maps or auto-grabs maps from other users, which are for treasure games. And they can be created by randomly generated, you know, patterns to create a constant new game, essentially. And with the new DS, 3DS, they're pushing that even more, that, you know, location awareness, as well as being able to find other DSs for gameplay. What do you think of that idea that your portable game system will know where you are and create content around that?
Awesome.
I don't think people will care.
No care?
I don't think people... Myself, I don't really care, but I don't
it's,
think
it's gonna,
the
it's
average
like,
public won't care.
It's going to be like Pokemon. It's like...
It's like gaming Foursquare.
Yeah, you know? We live in a Facebook generation. Mm-hmm. It's all about what I'm doing, where I'm doing it, and how I'm doing
it. Yeah, but it's been done before with Pokemon. I mean...
Even before that, it was done with the Gizmondo. They had a game, I think, called Gang Wars, where... Mm-hmm. I think it used GPS so that if you were, say, in New York, say, around 42nd Street... And your gang was from that area.
Latin gangs.
You would have stronger numbers there. But if you went downtown and crossed 20th Street in the real world, your gang become weaker because you're in enemy territory. Yeah.
Interesting.
And so let it be known that we had a West Side gang side flash.
Who flashed that sign? I wonder.
But
the whitest guy in the room.
So, I think I beat you.
At least I got Puerto Rican in me.
You can be a made man. I'm always the guy on the outside.
When it comes to Dragon Quest IX, it's going to be, you know, whatever gets more people to play. Like, it's going to be the thing to carry around at PAX or, like, the next E3 or
people are going to be excited about it. I mean, if they can make, like, a connection with your Twitter account, people are going to go crazy with that.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine? Yeah, I'm in
like, how many
this?
Japanese console makers, like, game makers had Twitter things, like, follow us on this now? I saw. It was, like, really weird. Mm. All right, so to wrap up, final thing, short, sweet, three sentences. What was the best thing about E3? What was the worst thing? Starting with you, sir.
All right. Best thing about E3 was, playing all everything you could get your hands on. My game of the show is Kirby's Epic Yarn for the Wii. It was. Speaking of, I mean, I wish I should have mentioned this during the innovative thing. Visually innovative, and it tied in with the gameplay. I mean, Kirby's made of yarn, and he like uses yarn and interacts with the background in that fashion. And worst thing was all the walking.
Okay, Jeff.
Probably my game of the show was Shank by Clay Entertainment. Kind of a hyper violent 2D action brawler, great grindhouse style. Probably the worst thing about the show, couldn't get hands on with Mortal Kombat.
Okay. Predator.
Oh, well, I'm gonna say, I've been to my share of E3.
I'm sorry, Forrest Whitaker.
Jeez.
Ghost Dog.
Screw you all, I'm going ahead.
Ghost Dog's badass.
I've been to my share of E3, and I'm happy that they brought it back to form.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy that it's like last year was a little bit contained. It was a little bit squished in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
This year they spread it out. It's basically E3 from 05 when the last time I went. Mm-hmm. And the booth babes are in abundance this year in
Nyko.
The gaming. Don't even get me started with Nyko.
Look like Lala from Space Channel 5.
Exactly, I was thinking the same thing. Ooh, Lala.
Fancy noses.
But the gaming was there.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of fun playing Vanquish.
Mm-hmm.
Checking out the Final Fantasy 14 demo, playing Terra, which was Warcraft on crack. Loved it.
The Dota equivalent of Warcraft.
I think it's a little better than Warcraft right now.
Okay.
I'll add something to his list.
What?
NBA Jam.
Oh, that's right.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And the game is back in the arena. Okay.
NBA Jam is just fun to watch other people play also.
Yeah.
It's going to be big.
So,
I'm going to say the last thing up. Really, worst thing. Just Dance 2.
Come on!
It's just embarrassing to see people dance
don't
like
stop.
That.
Yes, there was too much Vinkesha my entire week here.
That's right. Just embarrassing.
Yours.
I guess to keep it short, for me, my favorite game came towards the end with Spider-Man: Shattered Dimensions.
Okay.
Yeah.
talking about that real quick. I kind of got a hint from the guy. Like, I said, you know what? You know what would really work is the fourth Spider-Man? Alex Ross's Spider-Man. And he was like...
Whoa! That... Yeah.
And, like, he was like, I can't confirm. Like,
yeah.
I'm like,
yeah, you got some hints too, right? Yeah, I mean, there are a few things that were slipped out. Alex Ross, somebody did mention, and...
Because it would fit so well.
Yeah. No, it would. I mean, because... Yeah. I mean, I would love that. But... There were a few things that the PR guys were probed about, and there was a similar response with the whole like I can't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy actually let it slip because he mentioned that the 2099 universe is pretty much that New York, that futuristic New York, is run by three major corporations, two of which being Oscorp, and another one being Stark Industries.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So I asked him first. I was like, so if Stark Industries is in this 2099 universe, can we expect to see cameos from Iron Man or any sort of like Iron Man armor? And he said yes, but then quickly, like almost immediately after, was like, no.
I saw the Stark and I asked him that too, and he's like,
yeah,
it's one of the companies. I'm like, okay,
yeah. And I told him about Oscorp, and it's like, are we going to have some sort of Green Goblin in the 2099 universe? And then he kind of backtracked, but gave like the usual smirk. But they will have the a skin for that orange and Yes, orange and red.
The Iron Spider?
Yeah, the Iron Spider.
Nice. So it'll be like the hidden cosmic spider suit.
Yeah, they'll have that as a skin. But it was just, overall, it was just a fun game to play. I played through all three levels.
They're also the voice actors.
Yeah.
They got...
They
got the original 70s Spider cartoon show. They have him doing... Miguel O'Hara.
Yeah,
he's doing Spider-Man 2029.
Do they have the 90s one?
They have the 90s
yes!
one doing...
Oh,
he's,
nice.
He's doing noir.
Yeah.
One for JJ.
I know.
Oh, man.
And then they had...
They haven't released...
I listened to the voice, and it's the one from the new animated series doing The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, they haven't officially
announced
who the voice actor is.
When I asked him if it's the new one that was on WB, and he's like, I can't confirm or deny.
Yeah, I've got a lot of that this show.
It's going to be interesting to see who they use for, if they do the Alex Ross Spider-Man.
I mean, I think that would be the perfect dimension, I mean, as far as like the fun dimension. I mean, there aren't
because
really.
Spider-Man with guns.
Yeah,
because there were pictures of Wolverine, like in the future version of it, they had pictures of Wolverine hanging, as well as Black Cat and the Hulk as well. So,
hanging from what?
From the virtual billboards that they had. Like as you're swinging through, you see these billboards, and it's like X-Men stuff like that. So
yeah, no, it was overall, it was a pretty good game. I don't know, it's just fun to play.
And so the worst thing for
worst me. Thing, you know what? It's my first E3, so I don't have a lot of bad things to say, except for that poster when you first walk to the convention center that this changes everything.
Oh, from Sony,
from Sony.
But Kevin Butler, it's like, who wants to really point their finger and go pew 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 pew? That man, he's awesome.
I think that was really my only beef with the whole show. It's that damn poster.
Yeah.
But let me just stop before we close. Can I just toss him?
I gotta go. I do mine.
Just one more tidbit. One small nerdy tidbit.
Dreamcast 2 is not
good. No, not that. It's a nerdy tidbit. I think everybody will like. If you play the Contra S hardcore game.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
All right. I talked to the rep about that one. This is all I gotta say is up, down, down, left, right, left, right.
Yeah!
Start, baby!
Did it work?
She did. She just said, look forward to the game. That's it.
Go ahead. I think my favorite thing, this being my second E3, is that it was much more relaxed, relatively speaking. A lot of people, I think. The last year's E3, everyone was like very hesitant. Like it's back from because the one before that was the one that was in the airport hangars, and everyone was going through different hotels for demos and stuff like that. Correct, I believe.
Yep.
I think this year people are a little bit more relaxed. I think that the press thing was pretty bad, but I can't really say because I don't consider myself a true journalist. So I think it's more important that the people who are actually paid by legitimate outlets they say it. Mm-hmm. I think though the worst thing though. I'm an outside observer on this, and I think the worst thing is that you do have some of the media control, some of the journalists who were there who literally would cut in line because they're a big top guy from blah 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 publication.
Yeah, I was locked out of the FF14 Q&A for like no reason.
That was appointment only. You had to make an appointment.
Well, it's like you know, like
I was told to like go over for the Q&A by the demo guys, and I was like, sweet, I'll just go over there and walk in. There was no reason not to let me in. I just played the damn game.
But it's not just that, but it's like literally like calling PR firms 3 months in advance before E3 to say, can I verify my press seating and register for it for, you know, the press conference or this, and literally not getting a response back to the week before.
Yeah.
That was...
I've had experience with that.
That was the worst experience I've had. Last year, my first E3, I didn't know I had to contact PR firms. I use my hacker, the quote unquote hacker skills of social engineering, and I got every single conference I wanted without even making an appointment. And this year I decided to actually do it proper. And it was just like, I email you guys, I've called you guys. The only reason I got a call back from Edelman, who was doing Xbox PR, was because I called the office and said, I want to speak to someone who's above the person in charge of the Xbox team. I've left messages for the last 3 months and emails, and I've got nothing in return except that you're finalizing the RSVP list, which means you guys are doing celebrities first, right, than actual journalists.
Right.
And that immediately got me a call within, you know, an hour of me leaving the message. And so, like, I think that's one of the issues as well, is that there is this, like, I got this when I was at CES, that blogger podcasters aren't considered some journalists by some organizations.
Right. Yeah, at CES, they didn't have two different...
They had a separate... They had
bloggers and like, the press.
But I was... Because I did the video with a lot of the podcasts as well, I'm considered broadcast. I was actually broadcasting from the NBC booth. And I was turned away from a Kodak to look at their ZIA camera because the guy who was standing in front of there, even though I had an appointment, didn't consider me a true, you know press journalist.
Mm.
But I think that's something that is the change with E3, is that you're having so many people who are self-started blogs, self-started podcasts, now as the journalism core. Mm-hmm. It's no longer...
This is way bigger than just E3.
Yeah.
It's definitely about the building a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Terry and I both got to the Mortal Kombat event, because we're very close with the PR person who's handling that mm-hmm. that client. And you mentioned the VIP treatment. He put me in the VIP line, and we got in before all the regular people. So sometimes it's not just the ranking of your site, the popularity of it. It's like PR person knows you, mm-hmm. you're a rapport, you respect his work, he respects yours, and... No,
just go from there. Okay. Well, this is the closeout of the discussion for E3 2010. We're still held up in this hotel room because right now the LA Lakers have won the, what is it? I don't follow sports.
World Series!
Woo! Yeah,
World Cup!
Goal!
US Open. Oh, that Tiger Woods.
Swing! Slice. But so
you know
thanks.
What? It doesn't really matter. We got a pizza. We're good.
We have alcohol. We need alcohol.
That's the only thing we're missing.
It's coming. Don't worry.
All right. So this is closing out. Everyone, say your name and where you're from again.
Thomas Rivas, 2DX.com.
Valcor, theotherview.com.
Jeffrey Wilson, 2DX.com.
Timothy Torres, 2DX.com.
And I'm Patrick Roanhouse, host of the Planet Podcast. Thanks for listening. Later.